This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split Podcast. We are back for another week. We have on board, of course, myself, Rob Calder. We have the person that made the fatal error last night of watching a dog show and tears came. Zoe Carr, welcome to the podcast.
Only once when the poor dogs had to watch when they were being surrendered and they watched the people walking away, their owners walking away, got me.
It's all right, sorry. I would have been with you. Yeah. I would have been howling.
Yeah. Punny.
Very good. And the person who has already jumped in before her introduction, but that's quite okay anyway, she's going through a divorce at the moment, not from Neil, but from Ash. They're still fighting over who gets custody of Luke Kendall. I feel like it's probably still Jenny at this stage. Welcome to the podcast, Jenny.
Thanks. I love that introduction. And yes, I am. We're at the final stages of divorce. It hasn't gone too well, to be honest, but we'll get there.
Some hate-filled text messages have gone backwards and forwards, I'm sure.
Absolutely, and none of which I can say here because you would be bleeped out the whole entire time. So, yeah.
Makes sense. Coaches, we do appreciate all the likes, shares, ratings and reviews that you have managed to throw out there on socials and on the various podcast platforms. We appreciate it. Please keep that up if you can and try and spread the word as we slowly get back towards being on court, which would be fantastic. So the hope is that everyone can listen to the podcast whilst they're driving around coaching kids again, which would be a nice little return to normality for everyone. What we are talking today is the Fab Five, and we are not talking about the Michigan crew that had black socks, you know, long shorts,
just
black shoes,
calling timeouts
when they potentially didn't have timeouts. We are talking the Fab Five skilled. Now, these have been around for eternity, so we're going to discuss what is on there already, but we are going to touch on a little bit of do there need to be any changes, what are the important parts of all these Fab Five, and go from there, and we'll see where the conversation takes us from that point. But the first one we're going to talk about is probably my favourite, personally, of the Fab Five, footwork. It's, for mine, it's the most important. Everyone else is entitled to their opinion, but you'll be wrong. It is the most important, in my opinion. What are the biggest things that we have to consider when we're talking footwork, Jenny? What are the things that you're looking for with the athletes?
I'm going to agree with you, Robbie. Footwork for me is the foundation of everything, because I think everything from the ground up. And if we can't get that right, then we're up shit creek without a paddle. So for me, footwork, I just think about the ability to come off either feet, the ability to move either side of the body, the ability to teach balance off footwork as well in terms of body position, knowing narrow footwork compared to wide footwork, and then being able to use that to your advantage in terms of your center of mass and all those type of things, front to basket, back to basket, in terms of footwork. And then the ability also on top of your footwork, how to use it in terms of to sell what you're trying to sell. And make the defense shift, I think is really important. So they're the probably main things for me. I don't know if I've missed anything. I'm probably sure I have. And Zoe's going to jump in and add some more in for sure.
Oh, well, I suppose for me, all of those things, spot on. Another one for me is I'm really big on with footwork players catching on the hop, because we see all the time now, especially with the 3-point line in the corner or the drift, a lot of athletes stepping out of bounds because they're trying to step into their shots, sort of the, I don't want to say the old school way, but like that's what has been taught for a long time. So to try and avoid that, really big on trying to catch on the hop. And then from that, we're able to work off both feet. We can go either way, either direction. And now our decisions become based, again, I'm sounding like a broken record. I think I say this every week. Our decisions become based on the data in front of us, rather than how we've landed. You know, I've landed left, right. Now I can only move my right foot, or I have to, you know, that's a direction I have to go, or whatever that might be. So it opens us up to more possibilities and better decision making. Another one is teaching. I think it's really important. I think all of us, and I know early in my coaching, I neglected this completely, especially from a young age, teaching them how to land. Like, it's not so much footwork, I guess. It might be more of a S&C thing. But teaching them how to land as young as possible while they're bendy and unbreakable. So that, I think, then plays into being able to teach good footwork, because now they've got the ability to – land on both feet, land on one foot, you know, Euro steps, pro hops, all these things become possible because their body is used to that sort of impact and the way that they're moving and all those sort of things. So it's not like a, you know, you get to under 16s and now we're teaching Euro steps and things like that and your knee ligaments go, no thanks. So I think that sort of thing, when we're teaching footwork and we're focusing on the footwork as a isolated skill, I think teaching them how to land is really, really important.
I think you stretch that out a little bit too. It's not just footwork, but basic body movement, I think, is a really key component of this as well. I mean, footwork's nice. You know, can you come to a jump stop, a stride stop, but can you pivot? Like, that all sort of fits into that footwork area as well. But just the ability to be able to move and adapt and evade. And like, I think we're all of a fairly similar ilk in terms of ages. But I think about what primary school looked like, and it was bedlam at recess time. Like, it was Tiggy, like, around the school, that
Red
sort of
Rover,
stuff. Yeah,
Red
all
Rover.
That sort of stuff.
I think, like, they call it the Hunger Games.
Yeah, they might.
King of the Castle, playing yep. handball.
But all that
Hayaki
sort of stuff.
Home.
Like, Jesus Christ, we've gone down a rabbit hole here. Like, but that's exactly what it was. It was the ability to try and evade, like, you'd put pressure on your foot as you try and push off and those kinds of things, where our kids probably don't do enough, and they certainly haven't over the last 2 years, there's no question, but they probably don't do enough of that just naturally gained ability to start, stop, land, move laterally, evade, those kinds of things. And it's something, and again, I'll sound like the broken record here, but I know it's something they're really big on, like the kinder and playgroup, child age groups in Belgium. They do a really good job of putting programs together where kids are coming in to walk along balance beams, and, you know, the balance beam's like half a foot off the ground and it's about 4 feet wide, so it's not difficult for them to do, but they start thinking about those things. And it's how they move, and it's do they have balance? Are they coordinated enough, like, I suppose, holistically? Not necessarily for basketball, but those kids can then go and, you know, do whatever they want to do. If they want to do ballet, they can do ballet. If they want to be like a firefighter, they have the ability to climb up a ladder because they're coordinated. So yeah. I think footwork expands out to just be sort of coordination in general.
Oh, absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head, and the landing's a massive one, because we know most injuries don't happen when you take off, they happen when you land. So teaching that and the fundamentals of that is really, really important. And that's where I think us as coaches have to get creative in the limited time that we have with kids, because, you know, we all want to win and it's got to be about the system and what we're doing and stuff like that, but get creative with your drills in your warm-ups and stuff. Have the kids dribbling on one leg, have them having to do your dribbling, but have resist a body to be able to know how to evade someone, even play Red Rover or something, but where you've got a ball in your hand and that's your warm-up drill, you know. I don't know. I'm just thinking off the top of my head right now, just things, but that's where I think us as coaches have to get better. What are we missing that we're not getting, and how can I implement it into my 90 minutes with my kids, even if it's 5 minutes, because 5 minutes over a season ends up being, you know, a few hours or a couple's days worth of work, which is beneficial for these kids.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think warm up, you've hit on it, is probably the best place to do this. Things like dribble knockout are still entertaining, dribble tiggy still entertaining. Like, I saw some clubs using spike ball. Just as the lateral sort of stuff, where they got to sort of move and work around other people and that sort of body movement stuff. I think that's really where the value is. And we can talk about, like, the footwork coming into shots a little bit later on as we talk about shooting. But I think the ability to start, stop, I'd probably disagree with you a little bit, Jenny. I find the takeoff is when I do most of my injuries. but I think that's an age-related issue rather than anything physiological, but it is an issue. Like, it's our kids need to know how to run and things like that. Like, at what age would you start? Like, do you bother teaching athletes how to run? Like, if you had an under-12s team and you had one kid that looked like they were running in sand, would you teach them, you know, how to run properly?
I would, but then that's because of my background. So coming from sports science and strength and conditioning, yes, because a lot of kids, you ask them, do you do little laps anymore? Or you do, no kids really do cross country anymore, or they don't do, you know, when you have a athletics day now, you're not competing, you're doing happy sack races and egg races. And, you know, it's gone are the days of true athletic competitions at schools for the most part. So,
and everybody gets a ribbon.
Yeah, participation.
Yeah, well done.
Exactly. So for me, yeah. But then again, that's asking a lot of coaches that are there to coach basketball. They're not there to, you know, fill the holes of the sedentary lifestyle of kids these days.
Yep. I know you've been big on all kids should do little ats.
Yeah, right. I think all kids. So I became a massive believer of that. I never did little ats. I'm sure you're all shocked. but I became a massive believer of that when I met my beautiful, beautiful friend Holly Grimer, or now Holly Florence, who was just a tremendous athlete. You know, 6 foot, I want to say five, four, yeah. But just moved, and I said to her, "I'm like, what the hell? Like, what? You know, I didn't know her parents at that stage, or you know, I'm like, is this like hereditary? Like, because all of her brothers were super athletes and really tall and all that sort of stuff." And she's like, "No, we just did little athletics. Like, we didn't do anything but little athletics when we were little." And it's like, God, it's got to play a part, like, because you're doing all these different events. So it's working and engaging all different parts of your body and getting you ready for whatever sport you then choose to play, or whether you stay in athletics, you know, whichever way it goes. But I wouldn't teach anybody how to run at a young age, because I honestly don't know how, but I would get somebody to come in and help. So I remember when I was coaching my first head coaching job, under 12, five girls, My poor little niece. But there were some kids in there that I didn't know why they were running. Like, I could just see that something was wrong. And so brought Cam Rigby in, and he did some sessions with them and helped them out. And that was really beneficial. And I dedicated a whole session to that. And I think sometimes we have to get comfortable. You know, it's some coaches, we go, "Oh, but that's 90 minutes I'm not going to get with my team." Well, it's okay, because you'll be better off for it when they learn how to move and run, and, you know, they're not, you know, they're quicker and they're more agile and they're less likely to get, and granted, under 12s, you're probably not going to get a lot of injury, but as they're older, like, again, we've got to keep in mind, what is our end goal? Is our end goal to win an under 12, five regional grand final? No, it's to get them to improve and to get better and to become basketball lifers and all that sort of stuff. So, I think us letting go as coaches, and maybe also admitting we don't know everything and getting someone to come in and help with that stuff, I think is huge. And I think, you know, if you speak to your club, you know, they might see it as an opportunity to bring someone in for their program to, you know, not as a full-time role or anything, but to come in and have touch points with all the teams and all that sort of stuff. And so now we're talking holistic. We're talking, you know, not just basketball. We're talking movement and S&C and all that sort of stuff that, honestly, if we were to ask any coach, they probably say they don't have time to do. We have time to do it. We don't want to allocate the time to do it.
Mm-hmm. And the payoff is huge. Like, you're saying it's a 90-minute session, but it's potentially decades worth of ability from the athletes, because it's not just about the running and the footwork and that sort of stuff, but it's also about building habits. So if they know how to strike the floor, what their arms need to be doing, I'm sitting there like waving my arms around like I'm actually running at this point, like, I don't know where that came from. But, you know, that sort of stuff can actually build a habit for those athletes for whatever they do after that. So
I think it's just the toolbox, right? Yeah. A fundamental, you know, the pathway, BV or whatever program, every kid has a toolbox. That's what I just think of. Every kid coming into a training with a toolbox or a lunchbox, and us as coaches have to fill that toolbox. And then it's up to the kids as they get older to pick and choose what they want to use out of that toolbox based on what they are fundamentally sound at and what they see as their strengths and weaknesses. And I think, you know, that is our role. Fill that toolbox as big as and as much as we can with as much information, and then the rest is up to them as they get older.
Well, and it's on us as coaches too. I mean, we sit here and we try and fill our athlete's head with as much information as possible. Like, what I learned from Cam that day was huge. What I've learned from Darum since at Core Advantage is massive. What I've learned from just Jenny, like just talking about stuff or watching her run sessions and things like that. So now I get to pick away at their expertise without actually having to do the study for it. It's fantastic. So, like, it's something I've really enjoyed. So now I'm adding to my toolbox as well as a coach. You know, I couldn't go in and, you know, run a session and teach someone, but I can now recognize and make adjustments because I've seen, been around these people with the expertise.
And when we're talking about filling the lunchbox, just for clarity, we're not talking about lunchbox? Caramel slices, Ash Arnott.
Yes, Ash Arnott.
We are everywhere. We are still keeping tabs. It's no good. So as we move on from footwork, passing is the next one. So that's when we look at...
That would be my...
Your second one?
Footwork and passing, yeah.
Or have you just put them both on the same level and you've said passing is equally as important as footwork? Don't coach
well,
this thing.
Hold on, they're a Fab Five.
I don't think you can pass well if you don't have the good if you don't have sound footwork.
Okay.
Because you can never put the power behind the pass. So anyway,
I don't disagree. Passing starts at the feet, both from the pass and the receiver.
Sorry to cut you off, Robbie. Go.
No, not at all. Like Zoe just mic dropped on that thing, gave us seven words, and then just looked at me as if I'm supposed to talk next.
Well, you're in charge of this operation.
Yeah, and how well it's going as well. So the passing in general, how much of that is the ability to actually make a pass versus the vision to see a pass that needs to be made? Hit it, Zoe.
So, well, the thing that will have to come first is the vision. You're going to have to teach them. And it's the old saying, teach them where to look but not what to see. So let them find out what they need to see on their own. So then that will stick in their head for longer. So understanding that when you're trying to teach this stuff, it's going to be messy and it's going to be ugly and there's going to be turnovers. But we have to praise the idea or the vision because it doesn't matter if you can make the pass. If you can't see it, it's irrelevant. The pass is never going to go. So I think putting them in positions to, I guess, increase that vision and increase that decision-making again, and then you can work on the actual fundamental skill of passing from there. Because then, like I said, if you can't see it but you can make it, it doesn't matter. It'll stay in that person's hands regardless.
Any different, Jenny?
I think it goes hand in hand. I think passing is like scaffolding. You know, you build from the floor up and I kind of see passing as shooting to me. I think there's a lot of sound fundamentals that you teach in shooting that apply to passing, like following through, how to feel, like I'm big on dexterity and texture and feeling the ball come out of your hands and those type of things is really huge for me, and them to understand that is really important. So I think at a younger age, I'm probably more leaning towards technique. And then as they get older, I build in, like Zoe talks about, you know, seeing the space, where am I passing to, giving them those opportunities, and you build on that from there. But I'm huge on passing. I'm massive on being able to hit targets. And especially with girls, getting girls to not be afraid to pass the ball hard and firm and flat and fast. Like they're almost scared of the repercussions if they, you know, someone catches it on the other end and they hurt their finger, or, oh, you threw it too hard. Like, don't do that. It's like, no, break their freaking fingers, would you please? Because I think that's one thing in Australian basketball, if I'm being honest, that I think we've gone backwards in, is our ability to pass and pass well. And, you know, using Lono's terms, I think it is on time and on target kind of thing. So that's where probably I'm at with passing. But I think across the board somewhere we could go to another level compared to other countries.
I think a part of that as well with girls comes back to, again, I think I speak about it every week, girls like to be compliant. They don't want to make errors. So sometimes they're not 100% in their decision that they've made. So it becomes this little sort of half, you know, like they're almost trying to drag it back in as it leaves their hands, and it becomes this soft, loopy, you know,
I hope it gets
state
there.
Of awfulness. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's why I suppose I believe in the so much in decision making and in vision. Because it's, you know what, if you're going to tank hard, like Jenny said, like if that pass is going to get deflected, break the defender's finger who's brave enough to put it in there because you've passed it so hard, you know, those sort of things. So I think, in girls in particular, I think that's another layer that comes onto it. And obviously boys as well. But I think that probably plays into more what sort of coach they have. Like if they've got a coach that's going to toss their cookies as soon as there's a turnover or an error, then they're playing in that fear. Mm. And so then that's when these passes happen. Or we have all of our, or I know your favourite, Rob, in especially in under 12s, under 10s, under 8s, and a player's off and they're dribbling and their head's down and the coach yells out, pass it. And then by the time the athlete picks it up and makes the pass isn't there anymore and gets stolen, and then they yell at the athlete for not passing. So I think it plays into, I guess, how we coach our kids when we're talking about passing and what we're willing to be okay with. You know, for me as a coach, I'm okay if we turn the ball over because we're trying to kick the ball ahead and we overthrow it. Like, I'm okay with that because that's, to me, a good turnover in the sense that defense is still like, shit, if we don't get back, like, that could have been a layup. So there's still an element of, oh, we got out of that one rather than, you know, we've come up with a clean steal and gone and made a layup. So I think we've got to get comfortable with what we're okay with having happen in terms of errors and then stick with that.
And that pass in transition, if it goes out of court, it's actually a really good turnover because you get to reset your defense anyway. So yeah, it's not going to hurt you in live play, I suppose, more than anything else. But the creativity side of things is difficult. Like, it's, we do see a lot of kids that try and make passes that are potentially not there, but the ability to see that might be open or I'm going to try and throw something behind my head or behind my back, you actually want to encourage that. You want a little bit more flair and creativity because now their eyes are up and they're looking around a little bit more rather than just seeing from point A to point B, not reading where the defense is, not reading where the help defense is, not thinking about that player is open, but do I actually want to pass it there? Does that put us in a worse spot if I throw it there rather than looking to go somewhere else with it? So there's tons of different things about that. Do you have a preference on one-handed passes versus two-handed passes? Like, is that a bugbear? Because I know there are some coaches that are adamant it has to be a two-handed pass. There are some that are like, I don't care. As long as it gets there, it gets there.
I come back to the toolbox. I think you teach them all. And I don't think one is better than the other. It just depends on the situation and the context of which you're in at the time of when you're making that pass. So if we're not filling their toolbox with the overhead pass, with the push pass, with the pocket pass, with the shoulder pass, with behind the back, with, you know, whatever pass you want. So I don't know any other crazy terms. But if you give them all the options, then they can select which one is beneficial at the time. If we just limit to it to, no, it has to be a two-hand pass, well, then you're probably falling short on a lot of other options that they have. And then defense just gets smart of how to close them out. So for me, it's provide them with all so that they can choose which one they want to make when it comes to that decision.
So the one pass you didn't say there is chest pass. Is the chest pass gone in basketball?
Does it say two-hand pass?
Does, well, two-hand, look, we're splitting hairs maybe. But, you know, is the chest pass still a thing?
Yes. Like,
it is? Yes, yes. Okay.
But it's
there is an amazing two-hand full court.
That's what I was going to say. Transition, yeah. Really. It's not an entry into your offense. It's a transition, kick ahead. Just watch the boomers or even Diana Taurasi in the last game against the Aces. Yep. Some of her passes were just outstanding, especially if you've got a big that runs and rim runs. That is where, for me, I believe the two-handed pass or the chest pass, push pass, whatever you want to call it, still lives. But I think anywhere else, especially at an international level, defense is going to climb in too hard for you to be able to make an entry into your offense or, you know, anything like that with two hands. So it needs to be then, like Jenny's saying, an ability to pass. But I know you had an experience, Rob, with under 12 boy when you were coaching, yes, which is a pretty good little story time. I think you should share it.
Okay, no worries. So this goes into every community coaching course, so apologies if you've jumped into one of these and you're going to have to hear it again. But so for me, teaching under 12s, I do a lot of game-based teaching. So 2-on-1, 3-on-2, 4-on-3. The reason being it teaches the offense to make decisions because they have a numerical advantage. They should be able to find a way to use that to their advantage, whether it be go get a score for yourself or go get a pass to someone else, or it teaches the defense that to scramble a little bit and just play with a little bit of disadvantage where they got to hustle into spots, which is going to simulate realistically their defense in games. So we were doing a 2-on-1 drill. Kid came down the floor, and it's thrown the big behind the head pass to his teammate, and it's like, okay, we're probably going to have to address this. And it's like, mate, jump over here. I won't name him because I know their parents do listen to the podcast, so I'll save them the chop out on that one. It's like, mate, talk me through the decision on that one. And he's like, well, look, I know you hate bounce passes in transition, so I didn't want to throw that. It's like, hey, tick, we good. He's like, I know you hate passing across your body, so the ball was on his right hand and he went to his left. He didn't want to throw it across his body. I'm like, yeah, tick, we good there. He's like, I didn't think I could score, so I knew I had to make the pass. It's like, tick, we good there. So I knew the ball had to get there, but the only way I could get it there was to throw the ball behind my head. It's like, yeah, okay. Either a very good liar, which I believe is actually the real answer, or he's actually thought through a few of these things, which is fantastic if he has. So my response has to be, well, actually, I really enjoy the fact that you've tried to do something. You've seen what was supposed to go on. You've tried to problem solve it yourself. Hasn't come off. So my reaction can't be, you should never be throwing that pass. My reaction has to be, how about we go work on that pass for a little bit and then we'll try and roll it out in a game when we potentially need it. And unfortunately, I worded that very poorly to the athlete because he heard, we got to work on that pass, and that's the only pass he threw for like the next 6 weeks. Like, was this pass
so
behind
his head. You literally.
Yeah, far too often. You ever seen that little clip where the kid's on the T-ball thing where the coach says, put your eye on the ball, and like the kid literally goes and headbutts the ball? Like, it was that sort of moment. So you do have to be very careful with what you use terminology-wise with your athletes too. So moving on from passing, dribbling or ball handling. Zoe, what do you got? What are the big things here?
Wow. Okay. I suppose for me, I think everybody has to have the ability, 1 through 5, to handle the ball. Now, when I say that, I don't mean that you're in women's basketball, 6'6" to 6'8" needs to be able to bring the ball up the floor in the backcourt, but they do need to be able to handle it for maybe 1 or 2 dribbles, whether they're a pressure release or just to get it over the half or whatever it might be. So I think we need to, as coaches, make sure that we're, I guess, understanding of who is what, I guess. From a younger age, everybody has to do everything. Like, even if they're tall in under 12s, it doesn't matter. They have to bring the ball out the floor as well. The ability to find space, create space, and play under pressure is huge. So you've got to be able to handle the ball, see the floor, find who's open or find the space that you need to get into. But again, that I think with ball handling, it comes right back to what you're saying with the movement stuff in the beginning with footwork and being able to move. You need a turn of speed. Now, we as coaches, again, we set athletes in to alley drill or corridor or whatever you want to call it. Where, you know, turn, turn, turn. And often that's set as a defensive drill. So absolutely not knocking that or anything. But I'm not an advocate of somebody crossing the ball over 3, 4, 5 times, bringing the ball up the floor. Make your one move and go. That's where you need that turn of speed. So I suppose for ball handling, for me, being able to link that back into footwork and body movement, It comes back to that. So, yeah, being able to see what's ahead of you under pressure, manage getting yourselves and your team into your offense, when to kick, when to hold, all that sort of stuff. And if you can't manage that pressure, it doesn't matter how good of a passer you are because you won't have the ball in your hands to be able to do it. So, yeah, see the floor. Find the space and play under pressure is really important.
Yep. Jenny, you lived your life as a guard. What are the big things for you?
I think, you know, dribbling is probably my least favourite out of the Fab Five because I don't think you can be a great dribbler without having sound footwork. Basically it comes back to the footwork thing for me. You know, I think social media has a lot to blame with the amount and emphasis we have given to dribbling because everyone can look good in a 5-second clip.
Well, and COVID.
Yes.
Because that's all we've been able to do.
Yeah. I still think there's the need to be able to do the dexterity stuff and be proficient on both hands. And I'm not saying stationary dribbling is a bad thing. I think there is a need for it. And it's just like, you know, practicing your your form shooting and stuff like that. But I blame social media for the want and the desire for young athletes to think that having the ball in their hand and being able to break a player down in 10 dribbles or half of the offense is a good thing. I don't think that's a good thing. And I really applaud Zoe on the change of pace. It should be one move and you're gone. If you can't break your player down in that, then what are you doing with the ball? You're wasting time. So I really hate social media for that side, because we look at all these fancy, amazing triple between the legs, behind the back spin bullshit that is never going to happen in a game ever, in a 5-on-5, maybe in 3-on-3, potentially. But again, you don't have enough time in 3-on-3 in terms of the shot clock to be able to do that. So, yeah, for me, it comes back to footwork has to be fundamentally sound in order to be very, very good with the ball in either hand. And I echo Zoe's sentiments in terms of 1-5 in terms of your dribbling.
And you've hit on a massive one. I think that's a trap we can fall into as coaches and a trap we can fall into as athletes or parents of, you know, watching an individual session run by somebody where there's 8 crossovers in a row, 1-on-0, and those crossovers look great. Like, they're behind the back, they're between the legs, they've gone nowhere, but the crossovers look really good. And we look at it and go, wow. And then we wonder why it doesn't translate.
Yeah, and because it's not so much the dribbling that sells the defense, it's the body movement and the head and the faking and the story. Right. I always say, sell the story when you're dribbling or when you're breaking down a player. Sell the story.
Yep.
What are you writing on the page? They're the things that break down the player, not the dribbling. I mean, as me as a defender, I ain't looking at, you know, how crafty you are with the ball. I'm looking at, where is your body? Is it moving? No. Well, then I don't need to move.
And that's what as coaches, we tell athletes from the day they, you know, enter the gym for their first session. We don't say watch the ball. We don't say watch their eyes. We say watch their stomach or their chest. Like, so I don't know why sometimes we get caught up with this over dribbling, you know.
It looks good.
Yeah, it does. And it's good to film and it's good to put out on social media, like you say, and, you know, try and get more people for your indies and all that sort of stuff. But again, it always comes back to what is our aim? Now, some of these coaches that do these things, their aim is money, and that's fine. Everyone needs a job. But our aim as coaches, I suppose, in our roles here, and I would hope in VJBL and domestic and all that sort of stuff, is just to get the athletes better and better in things that they can use and that can help them be successful.
So you spoke before about making a move and then going, like that slow to fast is important, but just as important is fast to slow.
Yeah.
And our players need to have a change of pace and need to have a change of tempo about their game. It can't always be the same speed the whole time, and it's good to go from fast to really fast. But, you know, without giving too many spoilers away for those that haven't seen Squid Games yet, sometimes the change of momentum can be very, very helpful. So the ability to just sort of be able to pull up a little bit, stop, read, and then go again is so important.
Deceleration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Deceleration. We are very poor, and because you need a lot of strength to be able to decelerate, a lot of lower body and trunk stability and stuff to be able to decelerate. It's one thing we're poor at, and that's why one thing I think we're pretty poor at finishing is because we don't know how to decelerate. We're going really fast at the rim, and instead of being able to stop and prop and elevate vertically, we continue through and run into the back wall behind the backboard and wonder why we miss. But yeah, deceleration, huge, Robbie. Like, the ability to accelerate, awesome, that first step when dribbling, but also the ability to pull up really quickly. Like, you look at the greats, you know, the ability to pull up, even Patty Mills is a great example. The ability to be flying horizontally as fast as you can and then on a dime be able to pull up and, you know, whether it's vertically to shoot a jump shot off either foot or make a pass or whatever is just phenomenal. And so deceleration is huge.
Absolutely. And you watch any clip of anyone where they've broken someone's ankles, it's not the ball that's done it. It's that change of pace, change of direction on their crossover or their step back or whatever it is that they're doing. And most of the time it's going from fast to slow back to fast again. And the greats at that are just almost unguardable.
I feel a lot better that you just gave air quotes on a podcast as well. I feel a lot better about my running as we were going through that. But it is. And it's that old saying, like the most important dribble is the one you don't have to use. Like the hope is that it's gone before you have to put the ball on the floor. That's the big thing. The big things we do see with a lot of our athletes, eyes down. Like the social media thing, like we could do a whole podcast on why social media is bad for basketball, like easily. But we see so many clips of, hey, check out this kid in the gym, and their eyes are down the whole time. Like they don't look up, they don't see the floor, they're not surveying, their head should really be on a swivel with those things. You know, ball in fingertips, get control over the things, spread your hands out. We see so many kids with hands closed as they dribble the ball. It's just, it needs to be more explosive. It needs to be two dribbles and then it's gone. If you have to dribble a third time, you're either getting really trapped and you don't have a passing option, or you're being maybe a little bit selfish as a point guard, I would suggest.
And I'm just looking at a Kobe Bryant book that I've got, and I just think of him and, you know, his ability to break someone down in the post and not even take a dribble. Yep. Like, it's all body work, footwork. That's it. It fascinates me how much energy we spend on dribbling because it looks good.
And there is, it does need to be worked on. There's no question. Like, there's absolutely a place for like two ball dribbling and things like that, because you are starting to teach things like ball control and ability and movement and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, like there's a need to have it there. But there's no need to overdo this thing either. Like, we do have to be mindful about how much time we put into this and how much effort and energy we put into this, because it can be a little bit fraught with danger, because, yes, it gets clicks, but, you know, it's...
It doesn't make you get into...
Yeah, it doesn't translate to your game, I don't feel. So I'm with you guys. I'd probably have this as my least preferred out of the five, but acutely aware that we do need dribbling in basketball, it turns out, because...
Proficiently on both hands. That's all you have to be. Yep. Absolutely. And not lose the ball on both hands, and that's all you need in your toolbox. And then maybe your point guards, your shooting guards, you know, your front-to-bucket players need to have that extra X factor. But the rest of it in the five-on-five traditional game, nah.
Well, it's amazing how many junior athletes we have that say, I want to be a point guard. It's like, well, okay, the handle needs to be better then, because you can get away with having a little bit of a looser handle in that 2-4. But all of a sudden you want to be a point guard, it better be sharp and you better be able to get rid of it quickly as well. So it's, be careful what you wish for, I suppose, junior athletes in that space. Shooting. Now, we've done a couple of whole podcasts on shooting and finishing and those kinds of things, so we won't delve too deep.
I was going to say, somewhere Coops' ears are burning.
Yeah, we'll just patch him in for this one. Zoe, what are the big things with shooting that matter to you, I suppose, for our junior athletes?
Yeah, well, surprise, surprise, footwork. That's where it starts. You know, if you're, I don't want to say lazy, but slow with your footwork, and you're out of sync with your footwork, that's where it begins. Your shots, you're putting yourself under pressure. Now, you've got athletes like Bryce Cotton, whose feet could be anywhere and it doesn't matter. Like, but he is an elite shooter. So from a junior perspective, we have to spend time on feet. And that's another reason why I'm big on catch on the hop, because it does balance you for that shot. Obviously, I'm not so concerned about toes pointing to the rim or toes. You know how you see some athletes where they slightly angle their feet?
45-ish. Yep.
Yeah, because I think everybody's different. And I think some athletes shoot better when they open up, they're able to open up their hip. But I think, so for me, as long as they're balanced and as long as they're in that, I guess, shooting rhythm with their footwork, I'm okay with that. As long as their elbow is in and under, so they're not pushing from behind, I'm okay with that. You know, I don't like dips. I feel like dips in shots, again, I'm doing the gestures. But... I don't like dips in shots, because I do feel like that's where we end up coming behind the ball rather than underneath. So if we can get that out, great. And obviously on our follow through, elbow locked, fingers spread and loose, you know, rather than that, you know, real rigid sort of almost like you're about to slap someone, and pointing down to the ground. So tell the ball to go through the rim. But what I will say is, when I'm teaching shooting or I'm trying to adjust a shot, I take it one thing at a time. So let's get one thing right And once you've got that, then we'll move on to the next one. Then we'll move on to the next one. Because as coaches, we're givers and we want to try and fix everything and all that sort of stuff. We give our athletes like 8 things that they need to work on, and they work on none of them because they're just so sort of outside their head trying to, you know, get all these things done, as opposed to I don't care about your follow through at the moment. Let's get your footwork right. Okay, your footwork's right. Now let's tuck that elbow underneath. Let's get rid of the dip, all that sort of stuff. Just one thing at a time and build it. Like Jenny said, I think her first sentence, from the floor up.
Absolutely. Jenny, what about you?
Look, I think it's a very necessary part of the game, obviously. If you can't put the ball in the hole, then we've got a big issue. I think it's one that needs to be developed. It's the one we miss out on a lot in team training, and coaches need to understand it's something that you need to do every single day in order to become great at. It's not something you can do once or twice a week. No ever great shooter just shot twice a week and, you know, woke up and was the best shooter in the world. I think kids, we need to focus on process over outcome. Shooting is very much outcome driven, because if I shoot and it goes in, that means that I did well. In actual fact, it's not the case. And especially with age, I think going back to a size five basketball now in Basketball Victoria, I would hope in the next couple of years we will see a trajectory of greater shooters coming out through our pathway, purely because they're not having to fight the size of a ball and the weight of a ball at a younger age. And then, like you talk about, Zoe, developing poor habits because they can't generate, or they don't have the strength to be able to generate, to be able to put the ball in the rim. So I'm big on even removing the ring with young age groups, taking away that as the outcome, because that, I think, plays with their confidence as well. And then refining, like you say, one thing at a time. And I like to use the lines on the court as feedback loops rather than focusing on the outcome. Like, you know, you follow through, you land on the line, that's an indicator that the ball's going straight, blah, 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 those type of things. That's huge for me because they can get so caught up in the, oh, it missed, or, oh, it went in, and that's not what it's about. And then I think for me, you hit the things on the head in terms of everything, in terms of shooting. The other thing is confidence. Shooting for me is a lot about confidence, and how do we develop that as coaches in kids, I think, is one of, and even any athlete, like some of the great shooters in the world go through confidence dips. It's like, how do we build that? How do we manifest that? And how do we continue that through the ebbs and flows of having a shit day at the office is really important, because I think a lot of people don't shoot the ball because they're afraid of missing. And I speak personally of that. I actually was a really good shooter, but I got more worried about the outcome and letting my teammates down or missing or whatever. I remember Emily McInerney, right? Mm-hmm. Macca, yeah. Prime example, just would never shoot the ball, but she could actually shoot the ball, but she just never did or rarely did in her career. And I think that was just purely a confidence thing. Nothing more, nothing less. So for me, shooting, all the things you spoke about, Zoe, and then also coming back, I'm big on being able to come off either feet, and then, like you said, the jump stop as well, huge, and then also strength. If you don't have sound trunk strength, core, everything, because you talk about Bryce Cotton, that's because he's damn strong. And I think of Eddie Pavlinskas back in the day, and he talked about, I don't care where my feet are, it's all got to do with my hands and my forearms. And when you saw his hands and forearms, they were like builder's arms. So, you know, he was big on fingertip push-ups, big on shoulder strength. So don't underestimate the ability to have good strength in order to be a great shooter is really, really important.
So a lot of great points in all of that. Is form shooting overrated then, when we talk about all of this? Because you're saying take away the outcome, I suppose, Jenny. You're talking about the process as well, Zoe. Is form shooting necessary for our athletes to get better? Jenny, you've put your finger up. This is, I may have been misquoted here, moment.
No, I still think there's a place for form shooting. And I think it's more important as we get older.
Yeah.
And then you change the outcome. So it's not about, you can't be satisfied with it just going in. It has to be all net, or it has to hit a certain part of the rim. You give them a different focus for the form shooting. I'm big on form shooting in the sense of finding rhythm at the start of your session. So there's form shooting, and then I call, what I call in my sessions with the MP is rhythm shooting. So we work in close, and then we start to work our way out until we 5 minutes and we're at the 3-point line. So that's more from a like one, rhythm, but two, also getting your eye in, you know, your trajectory, knowing how far you are from the rim, those type of things, and the different types of elevation you have to have on your shot depending on where you are and all those type of things. So for me, I still think it has a place. Do we need to spend as much time as we get older? Probably not. But that's just me, Zoe.
I think when they, as they get older, it's up to them. That should be a thing that they're doing in their own time. And that's, again, why it's important as coaches that we teach our athletes how to coach their own shot, because they'll shoot more without us. Well, sorry, they should be shooting more without us than they are with us.
Yeah.
So we need to pull the answers from them of, you know, what would you change? What, you know, how did that miss? Why did it miss like that? All that sort of stuff. So yeah, when they're alone, they can make those changes themselves. Yeah.
And that is the confidence and the self-reflection and the ability to problem solve a little bit as to, okay, hit the back of the ring. What do I need to change in this situation as well?
I have a question for you though, Rob.
Yeah.
Turning the tables. Oh. What? How do you teach an athlete that is right-handed but also right eye dominant?
Oh, yeah, okay. So that's not easy. That's, yeah, obviously. Because everyone will have different load points. There will be some people that want the ball over the left side of their head, some that are over the right side of the head. I don't really have a great answer on that one, other than it is repetition. Because there's a lot of, if you were to survey any basketball team and say, where do you all aim when you shoot the ball? Some will say front of the rim, some will say back of the rim, some will say the backboard, some will say inside the back of the rim, some will say the ring, and some will say, not really too sure, I just turf it up there and hope for the best. So whatever is your point, that's fine. I would probably suggest not the front of the rim. That's just one of mine, but you know, each to their own. But I am really big on, as long as you have a clear line of sight with the ball and you have enough reps in there and your muscle memory is good enough, you'll be okay.
Yeah. I wasn't trying to set you up, but yeah, no, I was trying to say that this can be a reason as to why some athletes sit the ball in a certain position.
Yeah.
And they don't know that that's why. That's just what they do. Would you be more okay with coming across to the left-hand side or sitting outside the shoulder on the right-hand side?
I'll give the Coop's answer and say depends. there's no real good answer. It is what's comfortable for you, because everyone does have different levers. Your 7-foot tall athlete will have different levers to your 5-foot-5 athlete, so consequently they have different needs and things like that. So it is difficult to do. Like there's, but even some people that don't realize they have eye problems. Like there was a story about Steph Curry that didn't realize he had eye issues, went and got contact lenses, started playing with him, and his shooting percentage went up. And it's like,
don't say that. Now everyone's going to go out and get freaking contact lenses. Yeah.
This podcast brought to you by
Rob Calder Optometry. It is that sort of thing. Like you don't really know. So everyone will have different sort of needs about that. Some people do have eye problems, some people don't have eye problems, those kinds of things too. So you do have to be mindful and weighing that
and
in
a
there
lot
as well.
Of it, and a lot of it comes down to mechanics as well. Yep. You know, some kids that have really crappy ankles, like they don't bend the same way. You talked about that, your foot position. Well, that's normally because they've got really poor ankles or their knees or their hips and stuff like that. And the same with the hand position. The amount of kids that I see that don't have the ability to hold the ball and or have the range of motion in their wrist to be able to hold the ball, you know, with wrinkled wrists and all that type of thing is phenomenal. And that's why they shoot from down here, is because that's the easier to be able to produce it for rather than pushing up and through the ball. Like it just, I'm doing all the actions.
I was going to say, for those playing along at home, down here was her chest.
Clearly never going to work on radio. So, yeah, that fascinates me too. And so that's why you'll see kids, that's human. We're human and we like to have the path of least resistance. Yep. So we will always naturally gravitate to what seems easier, which is not necessarily better, but easier in order to be able to do something. And I think when you come back to form shooting, just to quickly think, I think of going into the gym and doing squats. Like I don't load up the bar at 100 kilos and that's my warm-up set. It's the same. I never see great shooters come into a gym and start shooting NBA three-pointers. Like, that never happens. They warm up, they're close, and then they progress their way out and find their way. That's just another point.
Excellent. Our last one, guard your player, defense. Jenny, we'll get you.
I think I'll just sit back
one.
And let Jenny take this.
This is Jenny's world. Thanks, everyone, for tuning into the podcast. Jenny, we'll close you off.
No, I just, I think it's one of the big parts of the game. I love defense. I think it's something in Australia that we've gone away from in our identity, especially in the women's game, if I'm being honest. Again, defense to me comes back to footwork. Footwork, body control, and the ability to read your player. We underestimate that you don't have to be the most athletic or the quickest to be a defender. It's your ability to know the scout, because we all know that people have, their strengths and weaknesses. And that's always when I played defense, that was what it was about. How can I shut down a certain player? What do they not like to do? I'm going to make them do that. What's the offense? Okay, I'm not going to let them come off this. I'm going to let them push them a different way. So, but when we talk the fundamentals in the pathway, for me, I just don't think we give it enough time and emphasis. Again, points wins you games. But I just think we need to spend more time on the two-way coaching aspect. And then again, footwork, pivoting is all defense as well. And body control is huge. So that's where I would start with defense. And then also a mentality. Like I always say, have offensive players have this mentality, I'm going to beat you. Why can't we have that offensive mentality when it comes to defense? You're not going to beat me. Like, I'm going to shut you down. I'm going to be your worst nightmare and you're not going to like me. And I'm okay with that. And I think that's what I, especially in girls, boys, I just don't think they care. They just want to be flary and, you know, be great shooters and great with the ball in their hand. Girls don't want to upset the apple cart. Oh, I don't want to not be liked. So I'm not going to hit someone or be physical with someone and stuff like that. So that's why they just avoid being good at defense. So for me, defense isn't so much about technique. It's more about just grit and determination.
Yeah, I don't really, this is probably a little controversial and might make Jenny vomit, but I don't really care how you stay in front. Just stay in front. And it's got to be a will. And you've got to take it personally when somebody beats you, when someone gets by you. Like, there's so, I think sometimes, and this might go against everything I've said in the podcast to this point, but I think sometimes the accountability defensively, we're happy to hold people accountable offensively when they make turnovers and errors or they don't run the play or whatever. We're happy to hold up as coaches, athletes accountable for that, but we don't seem to have that same drive at the defensive end. And it's almost like we're just waiting to get the ball back. And so, like, whatever, do what you want. I just want to get the ball back.
But it's one and done mentality.
Yeah.
It drives me insane. And that's where we don't have the emphasis on defense anymore as a coaching cohort, is because it's one and done.
Yeah.
So there's no accountability in me if we get beaten. Because, like you said, I get the ball back or it's our turn or whatever. But yeah, I hate the one and done. For me, it has to be to a score or to a stop.
Yep. And even I'll always go to a score, but the stop is never a stop. The stop then plays back to the halfway line.
Yeah.
And so it's like now you've got a transition from O to D, whether it's off a score. So if you score it, defense has to take it out of bounds. And granted, they just, if it's one-on-one, for instance, they just dribble it. There's no one to pass to, and that's okay. But if they just rebound it, now they're off. And so now you've got to switch off from offense and onto defense, and there's penalties if you stuff it up. So if offense can get to the halfway line within three dribbles, defense has a penalty. And so now you've got to lock in, and that penalty is going to be like an S&C ordinary something that you may not like, but it's going to help you in terms of, you know, it might be squats or something like that that, you know, you go, oh, I hate this. But it's going to help you, like it's almost like giving them the skill as the penalty. So you're not staying in front of the ball or you're not explosive enough to get back there. So you're going to do squats or you're going to do slides or whatever it might be. The penalty is the skill. And now, next time you go back in, if you want to avoid having to do that, stay in front of your of the offense and transition quicker from offense to defense. Because I think because of the way we structure our sessions, like Jenny's saying, of, oh, it's just my turn, I think that's seeped into us defensively from a mentality standpoint.
Absolutely. Any skills that are not in the Fab Five that probably need to be revisited that you can think of?
Decision-making. Decision-making and IQ.
I know you love decision-making, Zoe.
It's my baby.
Yeah, it's your baby. I don't know. That's a good question. The only thing I'll say about defense is the only, like, staying in front of your players, one thing. The thing I don't think we teach well is pick and rolls. Like watching recently certain tournaments and stuff, even the Olympics, we've become really poor at chasing people over a screen rather than beating them to the spot. Like we lead with our back foot rather than our front foot to get through a screen and going over high side. That really intrigues me. And then I'm like, but do we actually spend any time teaching this anymore? And I don't think we do. We just rely on, oh, I'll have help behind me and everything will be fine. But in terms of Fab Five, something else, decision-making, yep. Have you got anything else, though?
No, I don't think so. Just because everything else I think is sort of, like, you know, like adaptive finishing you can put into shooting and all that sort of stuff. So, I'd have it as decision-making / IQ.
Yeah, I think the only other one that probably has to go in there is the mentality. That is a skill that can be taught, the competitiveness, the mindset, and that touches on a podcast we've got lined up for a couple of weeks' time. But it's teaching what motivates the athlete, where does the competitive drive come from, that sort of stuff. So I think that's so I think it almost the Fab Five turns into like the Magnificent Seven or something like that.
I'd throw in running in there. Like yep. I think transition basketball is something, again, I've said a lot of things that we're just getting poor at, but our ability to run the floor has become not great.
Yep.
I think that part, running, whether it's, you know, in a straight line or whatever, but I don't know. But I just think it's an emphasis. Like if you bring all these together, we do them in every single drill, but we're just focusing on one of the emphasis.
Yep.
But we do passing in every drill in basketball normally, I would think. So whilst we're not doing stationary passing or whatever you're trying to work on, that there should be still a level of accountability for that task within that drill. But it seems to always just, we're focusing on one element rather than the whole picture sometimes.
And it's often shooting or offense,
yep.
Like which is important. I'm not, absolutely not. Coops, yep. Please. I'm not saying it's not important. But we could have the best shooters in our team, but what does it matter if we can't get them open or they can't get themselves open or we can't get them the ball. Because we're always playing D because we're terrible at it and then we can't bring the ball up the floor and they steal it off us and we're back in D. So, yeah.
Like it. Thank you both for jumping in. Appreciate it. Appreciate it. We will be back next week on the podcast. Coaches, appreciate all the likes, shares, ratings, reviews and all the cool stuff that goes with it. Good luck with your coaching, whatever it may be doing. Remember, social media is not the place for ball handling drills. You know, do better stuff because Jenny said so. Thanks very much, coaches. We'll catch you next week.
Stop eating caramel slice, Ash. Look, tune in and join the tribe on iTunes and Spotify.